Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to talk to us that way for the next 1 hour talking Giants football, the NFL, and, of course, the NFL draft. Today we're joined by Paul Dottino. Paulie Dots, how you be?
Good to see you, John. Today being the regional pro days around a lot of the teams in the NFL, and that's the day when a lot of the local college kids within the region that has been designated to them by the NFL gets to send a bunch of their guys, their players, to the local teams and has them work out and do all the stuff that they usually do at the combine. And so it's a busy day around the facility today. This was, by the way, one of those days I believe that Victor Cruz became a found player. I believe he was at one of those local pro days when the Giants actually got their eye on him. And, well, look what happened. He wound up being a pretty good pickup at one point. So you never know. A diamond in the rough may be coming out of today's session.
All right, let's take a look. And I want to throw this at you because you haven't looked at it yet. So this is going to be kind of explaining to Paul Dottino because he hasn't seen it yet. Mel Kiper came out with his mock draft 4.0 today.
4.0.
Yes. So this is his fourth variation of. I'm sure we'll have one or two more before the draft happens in about 3 weeks.
You know the great thing about all those variations? At some point, he can always say, well, look, I had him going to that team.
At this point, and me and Anita and I talked about this yesterday or 2 days ago, and you know, mock drafts at this point are nothing but educated guesses, and they mostly stay that way, too, until teams really start giving signals as to who they're going to pick.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, here we go.
All right. What do you got?
Jameis Winston at one. He is Mariota 2, though. He says that pick could get traded, but he thinks whoever the pick gets traded to would pick Mariota 2. So he is Mariota 2. 3, Leonard Williams to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not out of the question.
All right.
Amari Cooper to the Oakland Raiders at 4.
Could see
Makes sense. Dante Fowler Jr. to the Redskins at 5. They
want
to compliment Ryan Kerrigan with the pass rusher. Makes sense. Number 6, New York Jets. Brandon Scherff, offensive tackle, Iowa. Try to get that running game going on offense. I don't think that's out of the question. I could see a pass rusher going there as well. 7, Kevin White to the Chicago Bears.
Could see
receiver
it.
To replace Brandon Marshall. Not out of the question.
Could see it.
Number 8, Vic Beasley to the Atlanta Falcons. Wanting another pass rusher for that defense.
Could see that too.
Absolutely realistic. So now the Giants sit there at number 9. Guys that are on the board, Devontae Parker, Shane Ray, Randy Gregory, Brashad Perryman, if you like him. Danny Shelton is on the board. Malcolm Brown is on the board. Bud Dupree is on the board. With those guys not there, who's Paul Dottino's pick at number 9?
Waynes is there, right?
Yep.
I might go for the corner.
And all the offensive tackles are still there, too. The Andres Pete, the DJ Humphreys, Flowers. I don't know if you like any of those
Pete,
guys.
Pete, I'm not touching Pete.
Collins, he's there.
I would
there.
Consider Collins if I was down a few spots. So if you're going to let me trade down a few spots, I'll maybe take Collins. But if you're not going to let me trade down a few spots, I might consider taking Waynes.
Waynes is your pick.
I might take the corner right there. What'd he go? What'd he do?
He gave Shane Ray to the New York Football Giants. And I guess depending if you look at a generic best player available, you know, regardless of what system you run,
right?
I could see him being the next guy. But we've talked about it before. Drafting those 3-4 outside linebacking pass rushers can be a very risky proposition when you're a 4-3 defense and you have to convert them.
Yeah, personally, that would not be a good fit for me.
Right.
But, you know, again, a lot of this, folks, isn't about, as John just said a minute ago, what you think of the value of the player. When you compute the value of the player, you also have to consider your scheme and how you're going to use him. That's all part of it. So I would not make that selection there.
Neither would I. I think it's risky. I think he has talent, obviously, but I think it's I think you're taking a bit of a risk by putting him there at 9. I think you have to convert him, and I think you worry about that. By the way, at 12:30, we'll be joined by Matt Zenitz. We tried yesterday, but the Avery Johnson press conference at Alabama ran long, so he couldn't join us at 12:30 yesterday.
Wow.
So he'll be with us today at 12:30. Covers Alabama football for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. So he'll be with us at 12:30. A lot of guys coming out of Alabama this year. Landon Collins, Yeldon. So a lot of guys coming out of Alabama that we can talk about with Matt coming up at 12:30.
When you mentioned that to me, John, yesterday that we were going to have him, I think today, folks, you're going to be really, really lucky that you tuned in because I'm going to have to reveal my super-duper sleeper of the draft. And I have to do it because the Alabama guys coming on. That's a big hint right there. This is going to be a guy that no one's talking about. He's going to be at the end of the third day, maybe even an undrafted free agent, but he's a super-duper sleeper for me, who I think could be a really good fit for the Giants, and he would be a back-end guy. You know, otherwise, he wouldn't be a super-duper sleeper.
Let me see. Who could that be? That's interesting. Can you give me offensive or defensive side of the ball?
Oh, I can't do that.
All right.
I can't do that, but he is a Bama guy.
All right. Well,
he is a Bama guy.
That I assume. So that'll be interesting. We'll talk to Matt again at 12:30. Up until then, your calls at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat with the guests coming on at 12:30. I want to get to your calls early and often. Let's start with Greg in Virginia on line two. You can lead us off today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greg, what's up?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well, Greg. How are you?
Good. First-time caller. Been listening for the past couple of weeks, and got to say I'm pretty pumped about the draft. And, you know, I was looking at, you know, I find this draft interesting mainly because there's only six, maybe seven players that are really considered just locks for a top 10 pick, in my opinion.
If that.
You see Winston, Mariota, Fowler, Williams, more than likely Cooper and White. And then Beasley's been pretty consistent to be a lock for a top 10.
I think that's fair.
But once you get outside of those guys, it, you know, all the experts seem to have mixed opinions. You know, you see Brown, you see Pete, you see Scherf, you see a number of guys linked to the Giants. And then I look a little deeper, and especially with the old linemen, it sort of seems that outside of Scherf, you know, really you're – the old linemen are a year or two away. So that got me thinking even deeper. Now, you got, I said seven guys there, but after that, you still available would have Parker, Scherf, Shelton, Waynes, Ray, Dupree, Gregory, Brown, Collins, Pete, and then all the other offensive tackles.
Okay.
Now, from what I'm understanding is, all of these guys, I mean, I don't know what your opinion is, but it seems like any one of those guys, you could understand the Giants taking at nine, with the exception of maybe Pete, depending on how you feel about them.
Well, I think with the pass rushers you mentioned, especially the Gregories and the Rays, you worry about converting that 3-4 outside linebacker to a 4-3, either defensive or linebacker. So I think there are some question marks there.
Right. And I understand that. And then you're still talking about a couple guys ahead of us picking, and maybe one of those guys goes to Atlanta, one of those pass rushers. Either way, say you take two guys out of that mix, that still leaves five to seven guys that we would be okay with the Giants picking at number nine.
Absolutely.
So since we have holes at O-line, D-line, safety, and linebacker, and we still have a bunch of players left on the board that we would be happy with, it would be wise in our position to move back and get as many picks in the top 100 as possible. And with the players I just mentioned, I mean, you could still move back to even up to number 17 and get one of those guys.
Now you're getting a little bit beyond the border there. You see, where I disagree with you a little bit there is because I think, John, the way I've got it handicapped, you could have 15 players in top 10 value, the top 10 value territory, depending upon, again, your scheme and if what you like about a particular position, or if there's some other idiosyncrasy that you have or preference for a certain player. If you believe that, then at nine, the Giants will have, as you said, five or six players to choose from in their cluster. I'm on board with you to that point. But once you start getting down into the high teens, I think you definitely see a drop off. And I'll give you a great example, okay? To me, Scherf is a top 10 guy. And by the way, we've talked about this now with the Iowa radio guy. Oh, we want to make sure we get everybody on the same page. It is Scherf. It's not Scherf as it's spelled. It's not Shreve or whatever. It is Scherf as in a law enforcement officer with a star on his chest. That's what the Iowa radio guy tells us. So we're going to get that straight because you're going to be saying a lot of that name in a very short time, promise you. In the meantime, what I want to tell you is this. Scherf, to me, is a top 10 guy. Collins, Leo Collins, is a top 15 guy. But the example I want to give you is Andres Pete. Now, I talked to a personnel guy yesterday who said to me flat out, he's not a first-round guy. There are some people, and I had him at 20. I figured top 20.
And Kiper in his mock has him around 26, 27.
Yeah. Now, this personnel guy said to me flat out, he's too slow in his pass protection moves, so I'm really not convinced that he's going to be a really good left tackle. And he doesn't have the build, the proper framework to play guard. And he doesn't have the proper power and aggressiveness to play right tackle. So he says to me, he's not even a first-round pick. He said, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I think
now, how interesting is that? A lot of people think Pete should be top 15. Others think now he should be in the 20s, as John just said. Kiper's got him down in the 20s. So I got a personnel guy says to me, I wouldn't even think about him in the first round for those reasons. And he said, best case scenario, he gets stronger and you put him at right tackle. I would never put him at left tackle.
Yeah, Greg, I will let you finish and conclude your call. But what I would say is this. I have no issue with trading down. If, you know, one of those top guys that you think one of the top tier guys isn't there when you get to 9. But I wouldn't go much past 14 or 15 because I think once you get to that 13, 14 range, you get into guys with bigger question marks. Like I think Landon Collins, even at 13 or 14 or 15, is a big question mark. I think Pete, as you guys mentioned, could have a question mark. You know, I would be, you know, if you're talking about, you know, Ray and Gregory, even with the conversion, you know, maybe Bud Dupree's in that area. Maybe Lael Collins is in that area. Yep. Trey Waynes is in that area.
Yep.
You're looking at 4, maybe 5 guys where I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm cool with that. Devontae Parker, if you like the wide receiver position, he would be in that area in terms of skill and ability. So I think all guys are in the zone, but I think that'll take you down to 14 or 15, but not much past there.
I've been strong for 2 weeks saying I wouldn't go past 13, and then the Dolphins apparently, did you see this?
I did not.
The Dolphins yesterday.
They're looking to trade up into the top 10.
Yeah, it's come out now that they're looking to get into the top 10 at 14. Now, the reason I would consider now possibly going there, because I've said 13 is my limit. I would consider 14 only because I think if the Dolphins are trading into the top 10, John, they're going up there to get a receiver. They're not going up there to get one of the offensive linemen.
And if to move from 14 to 9, if you go by the draft value chart, Ben, it's 250 points, and that would net you a third-round pick pretty much.
Got to get a high 3 or maybe a conditional.
You just say you're going to give me your second, and if not, then I'll just trade to somebody else, or I'm going to pick your guy.
Well, what happens is when the phone starts ringing, now you hold people over a bow.
Right.
And you say, I know the chart says third rounder, but it's going to be a 2 because I got 3 people on hold.
No one's trading a 2 to go 5 spots.
You're probably not going to get it, but you try.
Right.
And remember, the chart doesn't include the premium for first round.
Yep.
Anytime you do a deal in the first round, there's an extra premium onto the numbers, which isn't calculated on the chart.
Well, and it depends at where the talent drop off is in each year's draft.
Absolutely.
Everything changes.
Absolutely.
Finish up, Ben. What do you got?
All right. Well, like I was saying, I am a Sheriff guy. I would actually love to see him on the Giants. I think our O-line is needs some toughness, and I think he's the type of guy you'd want. Now, I will say this. When I keep hearing about Waynes, and then I also keep hearing about Cooper and White, well, basically you don't want to put all the picks and the money into that wide receiver position. I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, if we picked Waynes, we'd be doing the same thing because we have Amukamara, who's a first-round pick. We have DRC, who's a big money guy, and you're talking about he's in another top-10 pick for that position. It would be the same thing as if you picked Cooper or White, being that you used a first-round pick already and have a big contract at that position.
The only difference with that is that Prince is a free agent after next year, so that's one difference in my opinion. Number two, you need 3 starting corners in this league.
Thank you.
Really, you know, you need 2 starting wideouts, and yeah, third one that plays a lot, but I think the third corner is probably a little bit more important than the third wide receiver. That, to
no
me,
question.
Is a bit of a difference, Ben, but you know what? I think it's a fair point, and I think it's something people can think about. Appreciate the call, man.
Wait. Yeah. Can I do one more thing?
Yeah, real quick.
And here is just to leave with this. I'm really concerned, you know, at the end of every year after someone comes back, there's all these reports, well, you know, it actually takes 2 years to come back from something, and I know that. I hate to say it, but that's what's going to happen with Cruz. He's going to come back. He's going to get 600 yards, 5 TDs, something like that. And we're going to be talking this time next year about how he truly wasn't 100%. So, and that combined with Randall leaving, I could justify going wide receiver, possibly Parker, just because if Cruz doesn't get 1,000 yards, that's going to be the narrative all offseason. Well, you know, he was still recovering from a major knee injury. And with Randall leaving, I mean, I wouldn't be upset with Parker, but I am a Sheriff guy. Got to get better in the trenches. But thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks, Ben. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling us. Don't be a stranger. Hope you call back. We love having first-time callers on the show.
I agree totally with you on your 2 points, especially about the third corner having to play a ton. We've talked about this before.
You're virtually playing 80% of the snaps.
And I'm going to even give you a 2A. A little bit less of a reason, but it does count as a reason. DRC was banged up a lot last year.
And again, Prince is a free agent, too.
A free agent.
And look, you don't know what's going to happen with that.
So,
and what happens if someone goes to Prince? Let's say Prince has the best year of his career this year, which isn't impossible. What if he stays healthy for all 16 games, plays like he did the first 5 or 6 games last year before he got hurt, right? Let's say he has 4 or 5 interceptions, makes it to the Pro Bowl. I mean, someone could go out there and throw Prince a 5-year, $50 million contract, 5-year, $60 million contract. It's not out of the question.
You're going to have to pay him. You know, you're going to have to pay him.
And then you're looking at Eli coming off his last year. You're looking at JPP off a franchise tag. And you're looking at Prince, a Pro Bowl corner. Those are big decisions you have to make there.
Yeah, that's why I could see Wayne's. And by the way, he is miles ahead of any other corner in this draft.
Absolutely.
It's not even close.
Here by himself.
He's a pro-ready guy.
I agree.
And the rest of the corners in this draft, they all have dents on them.
And the way he plays, by the way, fits what Steve Spagnuolo wants.
Oh, yeah.
Physical, bump and run,
man
up. He's exactly the type of corner you want in Steve Spagnuolo's defense.
Absolutely no question about it. He's a Sam Madison-type corner.
Yeah, that's fair.
Really, he's really, really a good fit. So I could not, you know, everybody likes to say that, oh, Tino's old school, he wants offensive line. Yeah, you're right, but if they take this corner, I'm not crying.
All right, there we go.
I'm not crying.
Would you cry if White and Cooper dropped and they picked one of those guys?
I would be much less happy.
Keep in mind, he was also much less happy last year after the Beckham pick, and look how that turned out. So there you go.
Hey, ask me in 10 years.
All of us are wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
All of us are wrong. The draft is still much more art than science. All right, we'll do a couple more calls before we get to Matt Zenitz at 12:30, talk about some of those Alabama prospects. Let's go to Ben in New York next. Ben, what's going on?
Good. First-time caller. Love the show, guys.
Hey, thanks, Ben. What's up?
Doing good. Going a little off-topic here from the draft. I was having an argument with my friends a couple weeks ago about Odell Beckham Jr., and just based, I don't know, it was only 12 games, but he had the best rookie season of, like, arguably the best rookie season of all time. You think he has potential to be Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Chris Carter good?
I mean, look, I'm not going to throw Jerry Rice out there. Jerry Rice is the best receiver in NFL history. So
Randy Moss is pretty good, and
Randy Moss is right next to him. Do I? Let me put it this way. Ben, does Odell Beckham have the potential to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver? Does he have the skills, athletic ability, hands, and all that stuff to be that type of player? Sure. But so many things have to go right for you to get there. I can name 100 other receivers that had those three things after their rookie year to be a Hall of Famer, but things happen. You know, you get stuck with a bad quarterback, an injury happens. You know, the team underperforms, and that affects your performance. I mean, there are so many different things that can derail a career. I mean, look how good Akeem Nicks looked after his second and third year in the NFL. Who would have thought he would be where he is today? Who would have thought Victor Cruz would have popped his knee like he did last year after his second or third year? I mean, just things tend to happen randomly. I mean, it's football. Things happen. So does he have the potential? Sure. Am I going to go on a limb and say he's going to be? No, because too many strange things can happen in this league where guys have great starts and they fade off for whatever reason.
I tell people all the time that besides tremendous talent and besides circumstances that also have to flow right for you, durability, to me, is one of the absolute necessities. You must sustain greatness. You must have durability if you truly want to be considered an all-time great. And you know, it's funny. If you want to argue the point with some of your friends, Take it to baseball if you want with Don Mattingly and Thurman Munson. If you want to talk football, talk about Mark Bavaro, Terrell Davis, guys who were awesome for 4 or 5 years. But you know what? That doesn't get you into the Hall of Fame. You got to do it for a decade. You got to do it for a decade, John.
Yeah, and the funny thing, too, about a guy like Chris Carter, remember, he was all but out of the league because of off-the-field stuff, and then he cleaned up his act, got back, and you know now he's in the Hall of Fame. I think he's one of the more overrated Hall of Famers. That's just my opinion. But, you know, so I think, Ben, that's how you have to look at it.
Just one more quick question.
Yeah.
What do you think Andre Williams' role in the foreseeable future will be?
That's a good question. Adding Shane Vereen, I know they have very different skill sets, but I think it'll cut into Andre Williams' carry simply because it'll, I think, push Rashad Jennings into some of the carries that Williams would normally get. So I think maybe before the Vereen signing, I thought Williams would get somewhere between 10 and 14 carries. Now maybe it's more between 8 and 12, you know, 7 and 11, something like that. But I will say this. I think he'll be a big factor in short yardage. I think he'll be a big factor on the goal line. I think
Agreed.
They'll just give him some series where he can go and contribute. I think that'll be a part of it. So there will definitely be a role for Andre Williams. Is he going to be a 20-carry guy with the other people on this team? No, he is not. But, Paul, they're certainly going to find ways to use him.
I would add two things. I think some of what you see with him will depend on if the Giants are playing with a lead in the fourth quarter, because I think he would get more touches if that's the case. And then the other thing I would add, too, is quite honestly, not even up to Andre Williams. It's up to Rashad Jennings to stay healthy.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Because
And
that affects everything.
And if Jennings gets hurt, all of a sudden, Williams is getting 15 carries a game, maybe 17 carries.
Maybe 20.
Absolutely.
Who knows? Who knows? You know, Rashad Jennings has to stay on the field for 16 games. Something, by the way, as much as I like this guy, he's never done in his NFL career.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show, guys.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to do we have Matt on the line here, John? All right. Let's go to Matt next. We got Matt online. Matt Zenitz, he covers Alabama football for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. He was going to join us yesterday, but Avery Johnson, we know Avery Johnson does like to talk. And I hope Matt had his translator with him down there. I know Avery can get a little creative, Matt. How was the press conference yesterday?
It was very entertaining. And like I was telling you yesterday through email, it went a little bit longer than I was expecting it to. So I was expecting to be finished by like 11:30 Central Time yesterday, and didn't end up being done until I think closer to 1 o'clock.
Wow. Well, you know what? Avery Johnson was up here with the Nets, so we are well aware of his ability to get a little long. So Matt, trust me, I feel your pain. Hope everything is well.
But very engaging though, very entertaining guy, very likable, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with Alabama. I'm very curious to see where this program goes under his direction now.
Absolutely, good guy, and I happen to think he's an excellent basketball coach. I think he'll do very well down there. All right, Matt, let's get down to it. It's Paul Dottino. I'm John Schmuck with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Matt, again, covers Alabama football for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. Matt, let's get right to it, and I'll start with your big safety, Landon Collins. There seems to be a lot of disagreement on where he's going to fall in the draft here. Some people have him in the teens. Some have him in the late 20s. What was your impression watching Landon Collins at Alabama? And the big question surrounding him, from what I've heard, from what I've seen, is how good is he in coverage? What did you see from Landon Collins in that regard at Alabama?
Well, for me, I've had a chance to watch Landon since the season. I spent 2.5 years covering the Baltimore Ravens for the Carroll County Times and briefly for the Associated Press in addition to that. And then last year, I covered University of Maryland football and college football for the Baltimore Sun before taking this position, covering Alabama late in February. So for me, the majority of what I've seen has been since the season. Also, obviously, Alabama is on TV a lot during the year, so I had a chance to watch them. Just being a college football fan and wanted to see some of the top teams play. But for Landon, I've seen him ever since the press conference where he announced his intention to go to Alabama and his mom wasn't happy about that. I'm sure you guys remember that, the whole situation. Since they're from Louisiana, she wanted him to go to LSU. And we was curious to see how Landon did at Alabama, especially considering the ranking was what it was. He was the top safety in the country and one of the most heralded players in that recruiting class. And what I've seen the last few years is a player that's a big, physical, athletic kid that regardless whether he starts or not year one, he's going to come in immediately and be a core player on special teams. That's what he was at Alabama, consistent presence from his freshman to his junior year on special teams. And you saw a consistent progression on defense also. And I know there are question marks about his coverage ability. I was on a conference call with Mel Kiper a couple of weeks ago, and that's one of the big things that he threw out there, the coverage ability or the perceived weakness there for Landon, mentioned that teams are concerned about that to a certain degree also, and that could drop Landon potentially into the second round. But I know, once again, that that's a big physical kid that's going to come in immediately and contribute on special teams, and whether it's the late first, the middle first, the beginning part of the second round, that kid is going to get an opportunity, and hey, I'm expecting him to be a factor on a defense, just considering the physicality, size, and athleticism that he brings to the table. And he also had some good games in coverage last year. I think it was a game against Arkansas where he had a few pass deflections and an interception. That was a game that Mel spotlighted. So it's a kid with ability that I think will go somewhere between that middle of the first round to beginning the middle part of the second round.
Let me ask you, it's not so much what you saw on the field, because obviously you got there in February, but since you've been around the program, you obviously know the kids who went to the pro days and the combines and stuff like that. Which teams have shown the most interest in him? And quite frankly, also, there's so much talk about Amari Cooper being a top 10 guy, but he could go like top 5. He could go between 5 and 10.
Yeah.
What teams seem to be really chomping at the bit for these two players?
I think for Landon, I'm not as sure with Amari. I'm sure you guys have seen the different reports that have been out there. Teams like as high as the Jaguars that he was in for an official visit with them, as low as the Rams. I think that's kind of the floor in terms of where Amari could go, number 10 there. But, I mean, there are a lot of good scenarios, situations for him during the course of the top 10. The majority of teams that could have any interest in a wide receiver pretty much brought him in. I was with a former Alabama player last night. Hey, I'm not sure of the Giants' level of interest in Amari, but the kid I was with last night was just absolutely raving about Amari, and there have been a lot of comparisons between Amari and Kevin White. This former player is convinced that Amari's going to be an absolute star in the NFL. This was a starting DB for Alabama last year. He's been around some very talented players, obviously, during the course of the past several years, and just went on and on about how Amari would embarrass people, not only in practice but in games, and was showing me some of the film things that Amari did to opposing DBs last year, and is just absolutely convinced that Amari is going to be a star for whichever team that he ends up with, whether it's someone like Jacksonville, whether it's St. Louis, whoever it is.
You know, man, it's funny. You mentioned Amari Cooper, and, you know, his combine number is really good, 4.47 in the 40. That's a good number. But none of the numbers jump out and say, wow, this kid, he did this at the super elite level. But it seems to me his craft at playing wide receiver, the nuance, the route running, the intelligence, the midstream adjustments, they're so far and above what you usually get out of a college player at that position that and of course, he also played in a pro-style system at Alabama, too, which helps a lot. He should be able to step in and, I think, be effective right away in the NFL.
I agree with you. And that was something Mel Kiper actually talked about on the conference call also, that he's the most pro-ready receiver in this draft. And you mentioned the route running. That's something else that his former teammate was talking about last night, and just the all-around skill set that he brings to the table. And in terms of that 40-yard dash time, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you guys saw the video with, I guess, the simulcast where NFL Network showed Kevin White and Amari Cooper running side by side. And it turned out later on, I think it was Yahoo that reported that the NFL informed teams that Amari's time was faster than what was previously put out, that the actual time was somewhere between 4.35 and 4.38, which does jump out. That's a very good time.
That does.
That's 6'1", 210 pounds. And I actually talked to a scout that I got to know a little bit when I was covering the Ravens, and he said that there were certain scouts there that day that timed Amari as fast as 4.31, which is a very, very, very good time. And, I mean, Amari, I'm convinced, will be somebody that contributes right away. I think Kevin White's going to be a good player also. People were impressed with Devontae Parker. The Alabama DB last night was mentioning him and saying that he thinks he might even be the second-best receiver in this year's draft. So for a team that needs a wide receiver, this is a good draft. There are some guys early on, like Amari, like Kevin White, like Devontae Parker, they should be able to come in and help teams out. Jalen Strong from Arizona State is another one. It's also a deep class with guys like Devin Smith in that second round area and some guys later on as well.
One of the guys who's not going to be a first day pick, in fact, there's a chance certainly he's not even a second day pick, Ari Quanjo, whose brother, of course, is already in the NFL. You know, when I looked at him on film, I had a couple of things that I wrote down, just some of the words: sloppy, disinterested sometimes. We know he's battled some injuries. And quite honestly, I worry about his instincts. But here's the thing. He comes from a good bloodline, and he certainly has the size, and he's come from a good program. So from the time that you've been there, what have you been able to glean about him? Is he a guy that should be viewed as a diamond in the rough, as a prospect, or is he a guy that you're kind of shaking your head and you're saying, I don't know what they're doing with him?
I wasn't really impressed with him, just what I watched of him, and kind of a quirky personality also. Seems like a very smart kid, but a different kind of personality that I could see turning some teams off. And it's hard to fully get into what I mean in whatever time constraints that we have. But the personality was a little bit different. I don't know. I found it – I don't know if strange is the right word, but it was along those lines. And just as a player, I've heard assessments all over the board in terms of Ari. Some teams like him and I think view him as – a third, fourth round type talent. Some teams view him as an undrafted type guy that is limited athletically, limited in terms of his movement skills, and question whether he has the ability to make it at the next level. And the knee problems that he had during his time at Alabama are obviously a question mark also, and he'll have to test out well physically in terms of the medical examinations for any team to feel comfortable drafting him at all.
Yeah.
One other guy I want to touch on, too, that had a really good pro day is DeAndre White. He had knee surgery back in 2012, the wide receiver that played across from Amari Cooper. He ran a 4.34 in his 40 at the pro day. He seems to be moving up boards. He had a 36-inch vertical jump, a good broad jump as well, better than he had at the combine. What do you think of White? What are you hearing about White? Where is he being considered, and what do you think his skill set is for NFL teams that are taking a look at him?
I think he's a very underrated player. I think he has a great skill set, and he was at a different school where Amari Cooper was not there in the receiving core. I think DeAndre would have put up a lot bigger numbers and would be a lot more highly regarded as a draft prospect than what he is. Injuries hurt him. Durability is a big question mark that could drop him down. I was talking to Charles Davis from NFL Network at Alabama's Pro Day, and he said that he talked to an NFL head coach at some point, whether it was on the phone or during the course of that day, DeAndre White was there in like the fifth or sixth round, that's the kind of guy that he would jump on a table for and try to get his team to draft. I think he's a rising prospect, and he's somebody that Nick Saban referred to as underappreciated in terms of this year's draft.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I'm looking at some of the numbers on him, and there has been an unofficial low clocking of 4.3 on his 40. Unofficial, of course. His pro day was 4.43.
Yeah. He did very well at pro day.
You know, at 5'11", 193, I don't know enough about him because I have not scouted him. I don't know if he's a slot guy or not, but if he shows capable of running routes out of the slot, I would think he would be a draftable player, certainly on the third day.
Yeah, I think he played primarily outside along with Amari at Alabama, and then they had Christian Jones playing the slot. But, I mean, just considering some of the measurables, and I think he tested out well in the shuttle also, which obviously tests a player's short area quickness and lateral ability and change of direction skills, considering he tested out well in that as well as the 40, and is also a well-built kid. Physically, you would assume that he would be capable of playing the slot also.
I want to jump to the running back position very quickly. You know, Alabama kind of had a revolving door. They used a lot of different players at running back last year. One of them was T.J. Yeldon. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing about Yeldon, and where do you think his strength lies? You know, the NFL is a two running back league now. You know, usually don't have one back taking all the carries. If a team drafts Yeldon, how would he best be used at this level in the National Football League?
Just a versatile kid. I think that's the best word to sum him up. He's big. He's 6'1", 220 to 225. Ran well at the pro day for his size. I think he was clocked somewhere in the low 4.5s. I think as low as 4.52. Can catch the ball out of the backfield. Good in terms of making defenders miss in space. And then he has the size also. And he was more trusted in terms of pass blocking than Derrick Henry was last year, which led to TJ being on the field more in third down type situations. And obviously pass blocking is a big obstacle for a lot of young running backs, and I'm not sure how TJ would stack up to some of the guys currently in the NFL, but he was trusted in that area by the coaches at Alabama.
Good stuff. Hey, look, I'm going to give you a little bit of a tip since you only got there in February, okay? I'm going to give you my super-duper sleeper, okay? Brian Vogler, tight end. Now, this guy, nobody's got him anywhere on their sheets. But I got to tell you something. Take a look at his tape, and you talk to your folks down there, and you're gonna come out real smart when this guy winds up being an NFL player. He is a blocking tight end, of which, as you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about because they don't put up big numbers, they don't put up big stats. Look at his size. He walls off people in the run game very, very effectively, and I got him targeted as a super-duper sleeper for the Giants, potentially even as an undrafted rookie free agent. I think this guy can make an NFL team as an inline wall-off blocker. I don't know if you've heard anything about him, but folks around your office.
I agree with you. Brian's a great kid, and he tests out better than a lot of people expected at the pro day also. So he was joking afterwards that nobody expected him to run better than the 5-flat. Not exactly a kid that's thought of for his athleticism or his pass-catching ability, but he ran somewhere, I think, in the mid-4.7s at 6'7", 265 pounds.
Yep.
Yeah, it got a little bit lower than I expected him to on the bench press. He got 225 for 17, but he's a good inline blocker, like you said, and I think he carved out a role as that traditional type tight end. I think you refer to it as like the dying breed at the
old school, baby, old school. You know, get a message to him for me. I need a little more power. You got to get him in the weight room, okay? I need a little more power, a little more strength. I need a little bit better on the knee bend, and I'd like to see him drive through just a little bit because what I saw was wall-off blocking. I want to see him push guys back a couple steps a little more, but I think I could work with him. This guy could be really – he could do a real good job in the NFL. Super-duper sleeper.
I'll give you two more quick sleepers real quick. Austin Shepherd was the starting right tackle for Alabama last year. He was at the combine, and a kid that I think will go somewhere in the middle rounds. Then more of a sleeper type, Nick Perry, who was starting free safety for Alabama last year. Somebody who split time early in his career with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who ended up going in the first round, obviously, with the Green Bay Packers. Nick finally got his opportunity last year and ended up being fourth, I think, on Alabama's team in tackles at 84 tackles. Not a kid that's going to wow you physically. I think his 40 time was somewhere in the low 4.6s, but a kid that's really respected within that program, was a three-time state champion in high school and had the success that he did at Alabama, and just a kid that's used to winning. And I know that's a kid that's been rising during the course of the last few months in terms of the free safety position.
All right, final question for you before we say goodbye. We're joined again by Matt Zenitz, covers Alabama for AL.com, Alabama Media Group. Matt, final one for me. I want to go back to Landon Collins for just 1 second. You talked about his toughness, ability to play in the box. He did a little bit better in coverage end of the year. The way he was used, was he not given the opportunity to play coverage a ton in the way Nick Saban ran his defense, or was he put back there and did he struggle a little bit? I want to try to figure out what position he was put in to succeed in college, and when he was put deep, how much success did he actually have?
Yeah, there were definitely times where he was exposed in coverage. He was used, I think, more in the box, and I haven't watched the tapes extensively enough to know whether he was used more as the rangy type guy back there, or whether they preferred to use him down in the box. But I know there were times last year, including a game that they lost to, I think it was Ole Miss. Yeah, I think they beat Mississippi State and lost to Ole Miss. But the game that they lost, he was beaten on the game tying touchdown, and then several minutes later he was beaten for what proved to be the game winning touchdown also. The game-tying touchdown, he allowed a receiver to get behind him. It was like a 40-yard touchdown. And then on the game-winning touchdown, he was beat just one-on-one in coverage. So regardless of how he was used, there were definitely times last year where he was beaten and exposed in coverage. And I think exposed to the point that there were other question marks from the scouts, the analysts, and different NFL teams about him heading into the draft.
Hence, not a top 10 pick in my book.
Matt, we appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks so much. Best luck down at Alabama, and we'll catch up to you real soon, all right?
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Appreciate it. That's Matt Zenitz, AL.com, Alabama Media Group, covers the Alabama Crimson Tide, giving a lowdown on some of those guys. Leave it to you to, by the way, can you take your coach's hat off for a second and get back to hosting the show with me, please? My goodness.
I know. Well, I got to pick out one of these super sleepers every spring, and they don't always come true. I had Arthur Lynch last year who went to
the
Dolphins and got hurt.
I was going to ask you what whatever happened to Arthur Lynch last year.
He got hurt, and he wound up, I think it was his back.
Did he get cut or did he
still
on the IR?
He was IR.
But is he still on the roster now?
Yes.
Okay.
So he'll
have the chance to make the team.
He does have a chance to make the team.
Okay.
Wound up throwing his back out and missed the whole season. Arthur Lynch was that guy for me last year. And quite honestly, John, if you look at the tight end crop, and I have done a lot of study on the tight ends in this draft.
It's pretty shallow.
It really is. And not only is it shallow, the guys who look like they have a chance to make an NFL 53 are mostly hands tight ends. They're not of the blocking variety.
Wolford's a pretty good two-way guy. He's done a little bit of everything.
I mean,
Max Williams has done a little bit of everything.
The kid from Delaware.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he can do both.
The kid from Penn State, he can do a little bit of both.
He doesn't play to his size.
No,
the size he has,
he's 6'7", 265.
And if you're that big,
you should be a better blocker.
You should be better than he is.
But at least he has the frame to do it.
But that's the problem. Frame.
Does he have the will to do it?
I need that. Okay. I need the heart to do it. Frame doesn't do it for me. I need the heart. But anyway, so I picked out Vogler, and hopefully, you know, he gets a good look with somebody like Arthur Lynch wound up with the Dolphins late in the third day last year in the draft.
201-939-4500. Let's go back to the calls. Vic is in Florida. We'll take your calls for the next 20 minutes on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Vic, what's going on?
Good afternoon, Paul and John.
Hi.
I'm old school like Paul, okay? I'm going to make a statement here. I kind of hate to hear guys calling in about wide receivers and quarterbacks. You got to get the O-line and D-line first. So my prediction is on the offensive line is Sheriff, and defensive line is, if Sheriff is not available, then Danny Shelton on the defensive line. Now, I have a question. Did you guys read the article on Giants 101 about the Giants being interested on this kid, Durrell Eskridge, 6'3", 208 safety from Syracuse?
I have not seen that, no.
Not seen the article, no.
Yeah, well, they're kind of showing interest in him, and he didn't do too well on the combines, but he certainly has the size of being a safety. But anyway, that was my statement, and you got to get that offensive line and defensive line first. When you build your house, you build your foundation first, and then you build the house. O-line and D-line. O-line and D-line. Sheriff or Shelton. That's my take, and thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, Vic.
He likes S's.
He likes you.
You know what? I understand because I'm a trenches guy, too. But just broaden your horizons a little bit on this. Again, the old school foundation says you got to have the four core positions. Quarterback, left tackle, a pass rusher who, if you're in a 3-4, can be an outside linebacker, and you need a cover corner. Those are the four spots you have to build a foundation of a team. That's old school. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an offensive lineman or defensive lineman, but that's certainly a great place to start because that's two out of the four positions.
Now I'm going to look this up. I want to get to a tweet really quick here, Paul, and let's see. Where is it? At Elite Giant. Wide receivers all over this draft. I haven't seen the Giants draft a single position in back-to-back first rounds in consecutive years. Use your memory. See if you can think of the last time the Giants drafted the same position in consecutive drafts.
Golly. You know what, John?
Let's see if I can bring it up here.
Go ahead, find it, because I'm clueless right now. I can't tell you. It would really have to go back a ways. Wow.
Let's see. I'm back to 2001. Still
no,
without the Jets.
No, before that. It's before that.
Tackle. It's corner.
It's
wide
way
receiver,
before that.
The end. Yeah, wow.
Possibly mid-80s?
I'm still going. I'm at 19. Well, do you count Gerard Bunch and Rodney Hampton? Fullback, running back?
Nah, not really. They played totally different styles and positions.
Well, 88 and 89, Eric Moore and Brian Williams.
There you go.
And that's a center and a guard, so technically different positions. But
yeah. Interior offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, and Williams did play a little guard for the Giants, too. He wasn't exclusively a center. Yeah, that's it. That's what I was thinking, mid-80s.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not something, you know.
And before that, I mean, yeah. Doesn't happen very often.
But you know what, John? It's a different environment in the league, too, nowadays, with the salary cap and you know, free agency, the way it works, et cetera, et cetera. You can't have those kinds of old-school rules maintain themselves today. A lot of things in old school do hold true today, but some things that you may have done in those days because of the way things have changed and differed, you just can't do them anymore.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Bash in Ohio. Bash, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
What's going on, John? What's going on, Mike?
How are you, Bash?
How are we doing? I want to piggyback off a question that was asked earlier of a draft scenario.
Yeah.
Heard you on Mike talking earlier about drafting down.
That's okay,
drafting
man. Go
down
ahead. Go
to
ahead.
The 14th with Dolphins. Drafting down within 15 and 14 the Dolphins.
Okay. I can see
down with those picks there. So trading up and getting possibly a second or third round pick.
You're not getting a two there.
Talking to Alabama guy and talking about Collins and needing a safety. With trading down and trading back up into this bottom of the first round with our second round pick and drafting back up in the first round, if Collins slips down in the first round in the lower 20s down into the 30s and he slips all the way down there, you know the Patriots are good for trading out the first round. So would that be a possibility of the Giants drafting back into the first round and picking up Collins if he fall down with that second or third round? Pick that we get from trading down in the beginning of the draft.
Well, first of all, I don't think you're getting a second round pick for sliding down four or five spots. According to the draft value chart, that's almost twice the value of what that move should cost a team. So
even
I think
drafting
it's
into the third round, even getting a third round pick, dropping down and probably trading back up to the first round.
So you're saying then, well, if you're in the second round, you trade your one or two threes to move into the back end of the first round to make a pick there.
Right. Or trading your second and third, right? The second, your ninth pick in the second round, and your third pick that you possibly get in the third round, and your second pick that you possibly get in the third round to trade back into the first round, bottom half of the first round.
So you want to have a twofold trading system?
Yeah, he wants to get the extra pick and then use
go
the
down,
extra pick to move up.
Go down and then move up.
Yes, correct.
Wow, that does not happen often, especially with this organization. It's not the conventional way to go at all because you got to find partners who are willing to do such a thing.
And I'm not sure you can – it's close, Bash, to be honest with you. I'm not sure you can get from the ninth pick in the second round into the early first round with a three. I think you can get to one of the first couple picks in round number two. If you get an extra pick and you trade down the first round – again, this is all hypothetical. Who knows what the heck's going to happen.
Right.
But if you find a player – and you see a player that's there at the start of the second round, and you know, you have that whole day between Thursday and Friday, between round one and round two, and you say, wow, out of all the guys on the board, we all have second and third round grades on all the guys left, we got one guy. He's like the 15th guy on our board, and he's still there. I can't believe it. If that costs you a third round pick, that to me is the type of move that's worth making.
Okay, so if Collins fall out the first round and fall into the second round, would that be a definite pick to move up into the early part of the second round if Collins fall into the second round with us needing a safety?
Well, I don't know how the Giants front office sees Landon Collins. I mean, I'm not sure if they see him as that caliber of a safety, to be honest with you. Who knows? Maybe he's not even the top safety on their particular board. I don't know how they view him. If they view him as a top 15 pick and he's sitting there at, you know, 34 – yeah, then I would consider making that move, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm with John on that. I will say this. Old school rule says, especially if you're in the top 10, and there's a guy you have really, really, really strong conviction in, you take him, and you don't even worry about
I agree with that.
Doing the deal.
Because you're going to get a great player, and you take the great player. You don't risk losing that guy that you have that great conviction on.
Yeah.
I agree.
And that's, again, if you're really strong on a guy. I'm only saying that if at 9, let's say the Giants were really strong on Sheriff or anybody, player X, let's say Shelton was the guy that they really, really wanted at 9, and the cluster is a little bit under what the rest of, you know, what he was, then if you want to move down just a couple of picks, like I said, no more than 13, maybe 14, that's it. You're really going drastic here. I mean, you're talking about going
right
down into the 20s and then moving back up into the 30s in the second round. You know, you're really going off the board. And I appreciate your creativity. I mean, that's cool, but I don't know that that's realistic. That's more like draft day to movie. You know, you got to get Kevin Costner on the phone. Get Costner on the phone because he'll do that deal for you.
Thank you, Bash.
All right.
Take it easy, man. I'm happy this guy called back today because yesterday he said I started sounding like you, and I got very, very offended by that.
You should be because you're not old.
Len in Columbia, Maryland is up next. Leonard?
Only I'm old.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Listen, I meant that as a positive, John. I want you to know that.
I understand
Paulie's top Paul's top shelf guy. I mean, I'm putting you up there with Paul. That's good stuff.
That is some impressive backpedaling you're doing, Len. I appreciate it.
Listen,
what do you got, Len? What do you got?
I just wanted to clarify on a couple of things that I said yesterday. I love reading the tweets in response to my phone calls. It sounds like the student evaluations I used to get when I was teaching.
Wait, hold on a second. Wait, Len, hold on. Are you on Twitter?
No, I just follow it along the side. I just follow the responses.
It comes up on Giants.com.
On the stream. Yeah. All right, because if Len was on Twitter, that would have to be a whole different conversation.
There you go.
See, Len is only 22 years old. This is all just a big scam here.
Hey, John, me on Twitter would rank right up there with me going to see Jennifer Lopez at the Locos.
Hey, you know what? Going to see her is not exactly hard on the eyes now.
Oh, Len, you made me laugh. All right, what do you got today, buddy? That was a good one.
Listen, I just wanted to clarify one thing.
Yes.
From what I said yesterday. I don't care if the Giants change the rules and invite 200 people to training camp as part of their roster. I just don't want those bottom six guys on Pro Football Focus's list who, you know, bottom of the unrestricted free agents. I don't want to sign those guys again. With all due respect to Antrell, I don't want those guys again. What I want to see is the list that Jerry, back of the napkin list that Jerry's got in his pocket right now, his projected 10 best undrafted free agents this year. And I want the Giants to sign those guys. Contact them now. Contact their agents and say, we got work for your guy.
Len, hold on a second now. This organization in the last decade or so has been usually pretty good about picking up at least one, two, or maybe even three undrafted free agents.
And last year it was closer to seven or eight after the draft.
I mean, you're asking them for something that they kind of usually do.
Well, keep doing it, I'd let out the word. We got work here for guys. I want the best undrafted free agents in our training camp next year. I don't want those guys at the bottom of Pro Football Focus's list of our unrestricted free agents. Hey, one other thing on the cornerback.
Yeah.
He's not Deion Sanders, John.
No, I know that.
And here's what I want to know about this guy.
Yeah.
And here's what I like about Prince. I want to know if this guy can tackle. And if it's just a matter of teaching him how to tackle, or whether this guy is going to give us an ole every once in a while. I saw enough of those last year. I don't want to see any more oles. So if you're going to pick Wayne at number 9, make sure we know that this guy's going to stick him when they're coming to his side of the field. Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Len. No problem. Well, let me see if I can find my scouting report on Wayne's here real quick.
Some of the terms that I used for him, tough, confident, aggressive, press, man-to-man. Look, no one's putting him in Canton, okay? But what we're telling you is, in this draft, okay, he is by far the most pro-ready cover corner guy that you're going to find. Now, is he Woodson? Is he, I used Sam Madison as an example before. I think he's a Sam Madison kind of player. Now, Sam Madison didn't blow people up, John.
Right.
That wasn't his specialty. But Sam Madison was a good technique tackler who could play press and man and understood the game extremely well. This guy seems to. And Sam also had that cockiness about him. He had an arrogance about him. That, hey, you know what? I could stop any quarterback in this league if I want to. I see all of that in this Michigan State kid. I mean, he is a top 10 ballpark value guy. The problem becomes, if you're looking for corners in this draft, the drop-off is just really, really steep. I mean, you're talking about a guy like P.J. Williams out of Florida State who now has red flags off the field.
That Kevin Johnson kid, Marcus Peters with another guy with a lot of red flags.
And Williams, as we've talked about it, John, I think he might even be a better free safety than he is a corner, you know, because he plays better in open space and being able to roam and ball hawk and stuff. Not quite as good, you know, playing up man-to-man, nose-to-nose on somebody. So he may be a better free safety, as I project him to be.
And this is this is scouting, by the way, on Trey Wayne. Sorry, Paul, for interrupting.
That's all right. Go.
Physical, can set the edge, good tackler, good leverage, effective attacking the lower body, and getting players down at the legs, which is what corners have to do against those bigger running backs. So he seems to be a pretty good tackler.
What's the size they listen? Are they giving him 5'10", 195?
No, Trey Wayne's 6'185".
Oh, they're giving him at 6 feet. Okay, I think that may be a tad high. I think he's a tad smaller than that. But
well, I can get his combine numbers for you right now.
Do we have his combine?
Stand by. I can get that up.
Pull up his combine. I didn't think he was at full 6. I thought he was a tad shorter than that.
Let's bring him up here. Let's see. They gave him at 6'186".
Did they? Okay. I will tell you this. He plays with the physicality of a bigger corner.
Right.
That's what I like about him. And at least that's what struck me. That's why I don't know. I didn't think he was a 6. I thought he was a shade under. But he plays hard.
All right. I want to squeeze in our last call here.
Yeah,
Paul.
I'm sorry.
Dre in Atlanta before we say goodbye. Dre, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? I'll make this real quick. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, Dre.
How you doing, John?
What's up, Dre?
I'll make it real quick. I've been quiet for the past week because I pretty much wanted to listen to what everybody said, but I've, you know, reached out it and looked at what we need is, I don't care who we pick at number 9, provided they have, or the management feel they have, the Odell Beckham effect, which I call, you know, that effect. If in your heart you believe, because no draft pick is a A1 100%. If we go offensive line, you have to feel that this offensive lineman will make an impact on that line. At Odell Beckham.
Now, Dre, real quick, and I will let you finish, I promise. Having an impact like Odell Beckham Jr. is a once-in-every-15-years phenomenon. I mean, that does not happen very often. To make that the standard, that's a pretty freaking high standard. You know what I'm saying?
They can't all go to the Pro Bowl, right, John?
But I'm talking about – I'm just talking about in your heart you feel. Not that he can and that he will, but you know he has heart. He has determination. He has the athletic ability to whatever position you put. If he's a center or he's a tackle or he's a corner or a free safety, you know you're going to get 110% from him. And when he produces, he produces. And there's no question about his dedication to his craft. That's what I'm talking about. He wants to get better.
That's fair.
You know, and that's I'm not talking about the actual ability in his production on the field. I'm talking about when you talk to this, when you interview him, you talk to his coaches, and you see the tape. It jumps out at you. So whether you get a corner in your heart, you feel this is a corner that once he gets on the field in that locker room, his personality is infectious. You know, his play, his determination on the practice field makes everybody else step their game up. You know, that kind of, you know, skill as an Odell Beckham. And that's what I'm talking about. Regardless of where, you know, where we go, you have to have in your heart, this is the guy that can bring this. For a first-round back, draft pick at number 9, that's what I'm looking for as a fan, because I'm trusting your decision that you believe this person has that type of personality and that type of skill set.
That's fair, Dre.
All right. You guys have a great afternoon.
Appreciate it, bud.
You too.
Taking my call.
I think that's exactly what you're looking for, I think he's 100% right.
John, there were so many years in the past, you know, the Parcells era in particular, where the Giants would be drafting near the bottom of the first round. You know, they're in the mid-20s, they're in the high 20s, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of knew that even if you had a guy you really liked, there would be some dents on his fender or on his bumper. Well, what you're talking about here in the top 10 is that the guy better not have any dents anywhere. You know what I mean? If he's got a little scratch of paint, that's one thing. But he better not have any dents when you're picking at number 9.
Quickly, some tweets, Paul. At JCS02008, I feel like Eric Flowers is quietly past Andrus Pete in mock draft boards. He has in some, but other boards still have Pete higher than Flowers on some of those boards.
Yeah.
Tag Rocket, do you think Odell Beckham Jr. has a sophomore slump? Maybe sophomore slump's too strong, but I don't think it's going to come as easily for look as easy for him as it looked. I know it wasn't easy, the final six games of last year. Fair?
Absolutely fair. He will be played differently, and now he will have to make adjustments to their adjustments, and that will be the key, in part, to his sustainability.
At LI underscore Giants fan, another guy wanted a running back. If Duke Johnson's there in round three or four, we'd better take notice. Again, folks, you drafted running back last year. You just signed Shane Vereen, you have Rashad Jennings. I don't think there's enough room at the inn, to be quite honest with you. Vinny Benelli, from all the 3-4 pass rushers, who's experienced playing with his hand down on the ground in the 4-3? And again, these guys, Vinny, they do rush with their hand down in the 4-3 in passing situations. The question is, can they stop the run with their hand down in the 4-3? That's the question.
Because, again, we've seen some of that power running game start to come back, especially at the end of last season. And teams, when they see that tweener on the ground, you know what they're doing, John? They're
right
going there. They're going there. They're just going to punch him in the nose, and they're going to go there, and they're going to try to beat him up. They're going to try to wear him down. And if they don't gain yardage on those plays, they just want to be able to take some of the steam out of him so that in the fourth quarter, he can't make his pass rush.
At Mikey Angel TV, with the questions about Cruz's health, is it not plausible that if Amari Cooper drops to 9, Reese might pull the trigger? I think Paul and I will both say that is plausible. Absolutely.
It is plausible.
Ben Gruen, in 7 and 8, they said the Giants drafted Aaron Ross and Kenny Phillips. Both were DBs, but one's a safety, and Tag Rock with that too. One's a corner. Though he did point out Ross did play some safety in 2009. But
yeah, but really,
when they were drafted, two different
very
positions.
Different. Very, very different.
Let's see. Anybody else here that looks interesting? There we go. I think, by the way, this one from @JCS02008. Who fields the phone calls in the draft room regarding trades? Mark Ross, Jerry Reese, or both? I think that's a Jerry Reese thing.
Yeah,
Mark Ross deals with the players. Jerry Reese would deal with the transactions.
As far as I know, I believe that the phone with the whole bank of the lines is sitting right there next to Jerry Reese on the table, as I understand it. So, yeah, I think Jerry Reese is the one who does that.
This is an interesting kind of inside the draft type of question. @Chris_330. It's a smart question. Do you think the Giants trade back to avoid paying the extra money for the fifth-year option? Because, you know, based on where the guys picked, that fifth-year option can cost more. I think it's a smart question, but I think to try to anticipate that far down the road and worry about that, I think you just got to get the best player.
Yeah, I can't see that being calculated into their decision-making process, especially since, John, let's not forget, and please, it is part of what the Giants are going to do. They are still thinking that they've got a chance to be a potential playoff team this year. They're not in the total rebuild phase right now. They still want to see what they could do about making some kind of run. And with that in mind, it's got to take a higher priority. A
couple of NFL nuggets to pass on to you. Fifth-year option on David DeCastro, the guard. The Steelers have picked that up. Second guy that's had that picked up, Melvin Ingram, was the first. Let's see. Steelers bringing cornerback Marcus Peters for a visit, according to Pro Football Talk. And Rob Housler, someone that a lot of Giant fans talked about last year as a potential addition for the Giants, has signed with the Browns on a one-year deal to try to help that beleaguered receiving core. Paul? Excellent work.
It was fun today.
Excellent job making a mess over there.
Yeah, a little bit of Gatorade. We'll deal with it.
Come on, man. I just replaced it.
I know you
washed.
Did. I know you did. I'm just.
You are cleaning that up after the show.
I'm definitely going to go get the towels.
Right.
But, I mean, I came so close.
You're killing me.
45 seconds away.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Lance and Anita have you on Friday on Giants.com. Take it easy.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
What an end zone punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.